You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi everyone. Quick content warning for this episode. There is an occasional mention of rape, rape metaphors, and incest. Not a pervasive part of our discussion, but it is present. So we just wanted you to know. Enjoy the episode.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Earth, man. What a shithole.
Damn, it's true. Where's the lie? Where's the lie? I love a movie whose last line really thinks they're doing something, but actually just serves to remind you that you know nothing about the character you've been watching for 2 hours. She's like, I have no idea. I've never been here. You're like, wow, beautiful, inspiring.
And it's Sigourney Weaver and Winona Ryder being like, wow, Earth, look how pretty it is. But it had already been established in the movie that Earth is a shithole. So I don't understand what that's about.
Well, but then they got that they landed, you know, somewhere pretty, and they gaslit themselves into thinking it doesn't suck ass here, which it does.
They shot a version of the ending of the movie with the same dialogue, but them in front of green screen with a desolate Paris in the background. It's just like, ooh, a broken Eiffel Tower. Ooh. And like, they're like, the military is going to come get us. And then Winona the writer's like, well, you could get pretty lost in a place like this. What do you want to do? And then it's the same, I don't know, I'm a stranger here myself. But it's just like desert land Paris in the background.
That's kind of fun. But also, much like a lot of thoughts I was having during this movie, what? Huh?
What?
And why? I am so excited to talk about this movie that... Truly, I mean, for Bechdel cast listeners, there's just, I feel like most of the time we have a grip on at least what's sort of going on. But this is one of those fun, rare episodes where I'm like, I'm at sea. I'm so excited that we have a wonderful returning guest to be our little Titanic lifeboat with the movie Alien Resurrection 1997, aka a movie that struggled to find watertight compartments to film in because Titanic was shooting next door.
Yes. Okay, so really quickly, this is the Bechdel cast. Welcome yes. to it. I'm Caitlin Durante.
I'm Jamie Loftus.
And this is our show where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point. Jamie,
yeah.
Remind me, please. What is it?
Okay. So the Bechdel test is a media metric invented by queer cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test. There's a lot of versions of it. Our version is, get ready, this. We require that two characters of a marginalized gender with names speak to each other about something other than a man for two lines of dialogue, and that it has to be a meaningful interaction. And we can't get more specific about that. You know it when you see it. And yeah, that's basically the test. This movie, I mean, the ways in this in which this movie passes are so Joss Whedon, and I don't really mean that as a compliment.
Right. Yes. And we have a wonderful returning guest. She's an actor. You've seen her in Teen Beach Movie, Z Nation, and the new movie streaming on Shudder app called Superhost. It's Gracie Gillum. Hello.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. I think we should open this episode with your rendition of the Bechdelcast theme song. Maybe we'll edit that in. I feel like that's
oh my gosh,
it's the only way. I screen recorded it when you first posted it, because I'm weird, so we have it.
I love that. You don't know what that means to me, because every episode that I listen to, my boyfriend and I do sing along with the harmonies to the opening number, just like, like, can't help but I have to sing along to the very, very catchy opening.
thank you for that. That makes us so happy.
Or also sometimes when we watch sexist movies, we just sing it.
Of course. Shouts out to our friend Mike Kaplan for writing the song, and to Catherine, a.k.a. Rini Voskresensky, for singing, for doing the vocals of our song. So shouts out to our pals.
Yes. A song that 5 years ago around now was being composed for the first time, which is so wild. Caitlin, I realize that this podcast is my longest relationship. Yes.
Wow.
Same.
Yeah, look at us go.
Same.
Wow.
Oh my goodness,
still in love after all these years.
Oh, the spark will never die.
What is the gift for a 5-year anniversary?
I don't know. Ooh. That's actually, Caitlin, we should have a weekend. Oh wait, we should finally go to Magic Mike Las Vegas, like we keep saying we will.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Wait, 5-year anniversary gift. The traditional 5-year anniversary gift is wood, a symbol of strong roots in an enduring relationship. Caitlin, I'm going to plant a tree and be like, happy anniversary, baby.
I'm going to carve Alfred Molina's face out of a slab of wood.
With just a little butter knife. Oh, God. Okay. Every time I forget the wood anniversary, I feel like that's a punishment for not being in a relationship long enough. I thought it was going to be like gold.
Right. It feels like the gifts must get worse and worse as your relationship goes on.
What anniversary?
I think paper even comes after that, which is just processed wood.
Wait, really? Who made this list?
I think paper's one of them. And it's a shockingly late one, I think.
They're like 50 years. Guess what? Paper. Divorce. You did it. You can get out of here.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Gracie, you have brought us Alien Resurrection, the fourth movie in the Alien franchise that came out in 1997. Tell us about your relationship, your history with this film.
I brought this movie, and I do not apologize, Jamie, for making you watch it for the first time.
Thank you.
I had not watched it until June of 2020. I had seen Alien, I'm sure, in some sort of LA theater screening, then revisited them, I think just because they were on HBO Max or whatever, and watched the 2003 director's cut, which I think is just wildly better. The tension in the director's cut, I think, is so much better than when after watching the director's cut, rewatching Alien is good. It's good. But the amount of, like not a lot of movies, I think, benefit from long shots of hallways. The 2003 director's cut of Alien very much does. And then I went through and watched more of them, including the first Alien versus Predator, and Alien Resurrection is by far my favorite Alien movie, and maybe among, like, easily top 10 or 15 movies for me. I think this movie is doing everything that really want it to be doing. I know that this is not a popular opinion.
No, I love it. I love coming in hot.
coming in hot. Critics have Rotten Tomatoes rated this movie 54% fresh, and the audience has disagreed with a 39%. And I'm going to disagree with both of those.
It's 100%.
It's at least a 92.
I'm so fascinated.
I'm truly so excited because I'm like, I'm at a point where I'm just confused. And so my mind is very open to being changed. I'm open to, I feel like I can be taught here.
I'm curious, did you watch Alien Cubed, the third one?
I've seen it.
I didn't.
I knew that, Caitlin, you had. It's honestly, it's skippable, like, you know, like the first episode, like people say you can skip the first episode of Star Wars, of Star Wars movies. Like it is pretty skippable. You don't have to know very much from it. But in terms of you watch it and the theme is just ruined and your heart is ruined. And then resurrection after that is very healing and satisfying.
Ooh, that's in the order. It seems like I did watch a bunch of franchise recap videos just to understand where exactly this is all coming from, because my history with the Alien franchise, which listener, I mean, basically is all contained in the feed of this show, mm-hmm. where I've seen Alien and Aliens because we've covered it on the show. This is just, this genre is so hard for me. I cannot follow. I get confused. Everyone's wearing the same outfit. This is why I can't do war movies. Also, I'm like, I don't know who that is. They're all wearing the same outfit. And when people are on spaceships the whole movie, it's like you're saying, Gracie, it's a lot of hallways. I don't know. I'm not built for it. But it's so like, do either of you have a genre or just like a vibe of a movie that it's like, it's hard for me to connect with, but I want to. Like, I want to. And Alien Resurrection, I mean, it certainly held my attention because so much is happening. The tone of this movie for me was so all over the place that I was on the edge of my seat just to see what genre the next scene was going to take place in. Where, like, there's, like, the scene where it's like, oh, it's kind of a tense scene with one of the xenomorphs. But then the scientist is like Frenching the xenomorph, like kiss me through the phone style. Okay. It's like, huh,
sometimes
what genre is this? Like, what is happening? So I'm just, I truly, like, I need to be carried through this movie in a little baby Bjorn.
It's like true. Sometimes it's body horror, sometimes it's a porn film, sometimes it's Space Jam because they're playing basketball.
There's sometimes a whole scene that's a Space Jam.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, like
what team, wait, does that mean, I guess that technically couldn't Sigourney, like Ripley 8 could easily, she would qualify to be on the Monstars, would she not? She's kind of a space alien.
I mean,
alien.
She's an alien, so yeah.
She can't be on Toon Squad. She's not a cartoon. Mm-mm. So she has to be one of the Monstars.
No. Mm. Dan Hedaya is a cartoon in this movie. Ron Perlman is a cartoon in this movie, but not Ripley.
No, death is both very scary and also something that happens to you after you look at a part of, take a part of your brain out and look at it. It is very many genres.
That scene was like, what movie am I watching? It all, like, the production behind this movie, I'm so excited to hear that you watched all the DVD extras, Gracie, because I was mostly interested in, like, how did this movie get this way? Because it's such a specific way. And I wasn't surprised to hear that there were a lot of, like, the director of this movie. Oh, let's see how I do.
Oh, good luck with this name. French.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Yeah.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who we have covered his work before in the form of Amelie, which I can't think of a more different movie on the planet. But I guess that he wasn't really able to communicate directly with the actors. He needed a translator to work with. And so it sounds like from an actor perspective that everyone was kind of winging it in, like, trying to figure out what movie they were in. Mm-hmm. And everyone seemed to land somewhere different. And Jean-Pierre was kind of like, we'll figure it out, whatever.
Yeah, he was apparently asking just crew members, like, what is, like during recording a scene, like, what is he saying? like about the dialogue that is in the scene. Like, I think there was a lot of French people on set, and he says in the director's commentary, which I didn't finish because it was so little about the story, that he spoke the least English. And like, this movie is visually cohesive, but the performances are not in the same film at all.
Mm-mm. Right, which it does sound like, and I'm a Josh Whedon detractor, even before he was revealed to be a piece of shit person. It's just, I don't know. I've never connected with this stuff, but he did seem to have like some severe gripes with how this movie came out, where he had that quote that was like, everyone said every word of the movie wrong. This is like, huh? Like, he's like, they said all the words that I wrote down, but they said them so confusing. Like, which I'm like, I guess if I wrote that script, I would also be like, huh.
I mean, starting with Ron Perlman being like, oh, Earth, we got to go there. That's a shithole. And then at the end, when they end up on Earth, they're like, wow, Earth is beautiful. And it's like, excuse me.
Just the cloud part.
Right.
Right. This layer of the Earth is very beautiful. Yeah, Joss Whedon said, quote, it wasn't a question of doing everything differently, although they changed the ending. It was mostly a matter of doing everything wrong. They said the lines mostly, but they said them all wrong. And they cast it wrong. And they designed it wrong. And they scored it wrong. They did everything wrong that they could possibly do, unquote. So he really did
That's
not like
very funny.
I think it's very funny. And also he's an asshole. Yeah. So it's like, who gives a shit? But I was like, wow. I mean, I'm curious of like, did he and the director ever get to like, talk? Like, I don't know.
It really doesn't seem so. I was really excited for some Joss Whedon commentary on this movie when I got the big package of it and was going to go into the special features. And I watched just so many special features. And there was one clip of him and a long line of lots of people who designed props for it saying what they thought the next movie should be and how this movie should have ended. And it's just him saying, I feel like there's a lot of different directions it could go. And that is the only Joss Whedon special feature that I was able to find.
Just fully tapping out. I also read some, and I have not seen Firefly before, but I read a lot of pieces written about Alien Resurrection and a lot of theories that Firefly was Joss Whedon's attempt to like course correct what he wanted Alien Resurrection to be like.
That makes a lot of sense. Oh. Yeah, because that show is also about space pirates doing space pirate stuff. So
right.
I can see that.
So I guess if you wanted to see Joss Whedon's Alien Resurrection, you should watch Firefly.
Yeah, or Serenity.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit more serious.
Mm-hmm. My relationship with this movie and the Alien franchise in general, I am a pretty big fan of the first two movies, Alien and Aliens. And then for me, the franchise keeps getting worse and worse. I have not seen either Alien versus Predator movie, but I have seen Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Prometheus, and Alien Covenant. And it's really just the first two movies I care about. But I do appreciate how many swings this movie takes as far as just wild narrative and production design choices.
There is. Caitlin and I were talking about this right before you came on the call, Gracie, where like I find this franchise so interesting because it's like Sigourney Weaver is holding it down throughout. Mm. Like, love her. You know that there's going to be great action sequences with women when she's in a movie. And then it's like you get four very different male directors with seemingly very different anxieties surrounding birth, just like letting it all out over the course of 20 years. It's just like so bizarre that it even happened. So I'm glad it happened, but what a thing to have happened.
Yeah. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and recap the movie.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we are back. I figured to start us off, since this is the fourth movie in the franchise, I would just do very, very quick recaps of the first three movies, where Alien from 1979 is about an alien that makes its way onto a spaceship and kills the whole crew except for Ellen Ripley.
And Jonesy.
Love it.
And Jonesy the cat, yes.
Who, fun fact, is credited as Jones, which I think is very funny.
Aww. Really? Is that Jonesy's stage name? It's like, it's just Jones. Like, it's just Jones.
Please call me Jonesy.
I want to meet Jonesy at a bar and really pick their mind.
Yeah.
So, Aliens from 1986. Ripley is brought along to advise on this military operation because something, maybe aliens, is thought to have wiped out a small population that is terraforming a distant planet. Turns out, yes, it is aliens. There's this big mother queen alien. She has all of these offspring, and they kill everybody, almost everybody, except for Ripley and this little girl, Newt, who escape into space. Alien 3 from 92 picks up right where Aliens leaves off, where Ripley, I think, crash lands onto a planet where the population is all of these prisoners.
So this is, so it's like the Ridley Scott one, James Cameron is Aliens, which is Mommy, and then David Fincher is the one we're talking about.
Alien 3.
Just for those who are not into the franchise, I feel like all these directors have very recognizable styles and themes, and it kind of like helped my brain click a little bit.
Yeah. Yes. So Alien 3, directed by David Fincher. So she crash lands onto this planet full of like religious extremist prisoners. There's also
sex criminal prisoners.
Yes. They all have YY chromosomes, so they're like extra male, extra aggressive. And it's
David Fincher.
Okay. Very early career, and like was the fifth or something director attached to it, and they were writing that one as they shot it.
Yikes. You can tell.
Yikes.
Anyway, Ripley has unknowingly brought an alien along with her to this planet, and it kills a bunch of people, and then she kills the alien and also has to sacrifice herself at the end because she has been impregnated with an alien.
Death by Mommy.
Yeah. So then Alien Resurrection, which is what we are talking about today, we are on a military medical research spaceship that is floating through space. These scientists have cloned Ripley, and we see them surgically remove an alien fetus from her chest cavity.
It's worth noting that the difference between this alien being removed from a chest cavity and all of the other times we get to see that in this franchise is that this alien is not circumcised. This one definitely still has foreskin.
It had foreskin, yeah.
Wow. I watched this movie twice and I did not get, wow. This movie really rewards a rewatch. You're like, wait a second. I'm very interested in talking about in this franchise, like later in the episode, how the idea of an alien parasite is treated differently in male characters versus female characters, where I feel like with the men, it's truly like a parasite and you're like, get it out of me, like yucky. But with the female characters, it's like, oh, birth.
You're its mommy. Mm-hmm.
You would think that the parasite would behave the same regardless of who it's inside, but it just seems to know when it's inside someone with a womb. And
yeah,
it acts a little different. And I'm like, you guys, you guys, think it through.
Yeah. Also, because Ripley is a clone, she doesn't have the same cognition and memories as the Ripley we've come to know and love in the other three movies. Although she does have some of the memories, and then she develops more cognition throughout the movie.
Right.
But at first, she's almost kind of like a baby herself.
She's just Space Jam.
She's born sexy yesterday, but she does know stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like a variation on that.
The born sexy yesterday
trope.
Thing. Yeah.
She was like born Sigourney Weaver today with some of Sigourney Weaver's memories.
But this time she has a manicure.
Important.
Because she's an alien.
That's how you know. And like Sigourney Weaver, I mean, in my mind, like she can do no wrong. She's the hottest person on the face of the planet. She's amazing. But the things that she has to do in this movie, the whole, like, there's, I would say, approximately 500 birth metaphors a minute.
Conservatively, in yeah.
This at movie. Least. But the one where she's, like, kind of hatching out of a cocoon and the movie really, like, lets you sit in it and she's like, And then she, like, it's like, where are we? France.
We're in France.
Space France.
Okay, so the alien that they have removed from Ripley is a queen. Mm-hmm. And the military scientist's plan is to have that queen reproduce because they want to tame the aliens, train them, weaponize them, etc.
Make vaccines, I guess. Apparently.
Yeah. And we love vaccines, so I'm actually fine with them doing that. And then Ripley warns them that if they try to do all of this stuff, everyone's gonna die. Then the crew from this like commercial freighter, again, basically space pirates, boards the military vessel. This crew includes Johnner, that's Ron Perlman, Call, that's Winona Ryder, other people who I don't recognize, so I'm not gonna list the actors' names, but Vrees, Christy, Hillard, and then their captain, Elgin. Mm-hmm. They are there to bring cargo to Perez, that's Dan Hydea, and it turns out that this cargo is a bunch of human bodies that are in some sort of like cryostasis sleep that the scientists will use these people as vessels for the face huggers that come out of the eggs that the queen lays to impregnate so that the aliens will reproduce.
Right.
So.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Thank you for that. No matter how many times I hear it, I can't get that piece of information to live in my brain like a parasite. I'm just like, in 10 minutes, I'll need to hear that again.
Totally fine. Yeah. So the canon that has been established in the other alien movies is that a queen lays an egg. What comes out of the egg is a face hugger. It impregnates a human, usually human host. Mm-hmm. And then an alien fetus bursts out of the human host's chest and then grows very, very quickly into a full adult alien that goes on to kill people. However, as we will find shortly, this kind of gestation reproduction process changes in this movie.
Well, it's in the first movie, the canon is that they're all like, it's kind of a sexless reproduction. Like the set looks like they're turning, the captured crew members from the first film are turning into eggs. And I know that Ridley was really interested in that. And what I think is so cool about this monster is, you know, it didn't really, and I don't think anybody thought about it as a rape metaphor until they hired a woman to play the lead, but it does really work really well as one, I think, and in this non-gendered way, which is what's so wrong with Alien Cube. It's like, let's just complicate. Like, what if the metaphor was just the plot? It's mother, exclamation point. but, like, the first movie, it feels like there's just the one kind of alien, and they can do the reproduction themselves. And within the canon, people recognize that, but then there can also elect a mother like a bee, and that is more efficient. There's more eggs getting laid if that's the case. But there's not a need for there to be a mother in the first movie, and it's only once they're writing for Sigourney Weaver that anybody decides there needs to be a mother.
Right, because the queen doesn't get introduced until Aliens.
Right.
And prior to that, yeah, I think it's just assumed that these eggs appear somehow.
Same as the cocoons, I guess.
Which, it's like, so it's just like, as it's so bizarre to think, like, as this franchise continues, it just gets, like, mommier and mommier.
Yeah.
Like, in more ham-fisted ways.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
Yep, yep, yep. Okay, so then we see a scene where Ripley meets this ragtag crew of space pirates. She sort of plays basketball with them, and then she also fights them. She also seems superhuman, and her blood is acidic, just like the alien's blood is. So it's becoming increasingly clear that she is perhaps part alien. Then Winona Ryder, aka Call, goes to try to kill Ripley. Call is trying to kind of secretly stop the military people from breeding the aliens, but then she doesn't end up killing Ripley when she realizes they've already taken the alien out of her. And then this big fight breaks out between the space pirates and the military, where most of the military end up dead. This is also when hell just kind of generally breaks loose, where a couple aliens get loose from their enclosure and kill several people, including Dan Hydea and the character Elgin.
R.I.P. And you get that amazing, what you were saying earlier, Chrissy, like your head gets blown out and he's like, oh, my brains. And then Dan Hydea goes home and he's like, wow, this is going to be such a hilarious comedy that I just shot. Like, he, who knows?
Right, right.
I enjoyed that moment a lot because I was like, yeah, you know, he really does think that this is a different genre, and I appreciate his commitment.
Yes.
Oh, so cartoony. We always quote Liz Lemon at that point, because she's got a line on 30 Rock that's, I hope it's not an important part of my blurn. <There.
laughs> yep. Wow. Okay, so then Ripley teams up with the space pirates. One of the scientists is also with them, Ren, and they have to start to figure out how to get off this military ship that is now completely infested with aliens. So they make their way to their cargo freighter called the Betty, and on the way, Ripley discovers a room with a bunch of past Ripley clones, presumably the first seven that didn't work out because they keep calling her Ripley 8. So it turns out they were just, you know, making all these like Ripley slash alien hybrids. There's all manner of body horror in this scene. And then she destroys all of them and then they move onward.
With a, like a flamethrower.
Yeah.
It's like she couldn't destroy them any more.
Yeah. It's just, it's canon for there to be a flamethrower death. And it's canon for someone to go kill me.
Kill me.
Which...
yeah, true.
It's nice to get a return to that and sort of a full circle of it being Ripley.
For sure.
Love a good callback, yeah. Also, so after Ripley destroys all of the failed clones, Ron Perlman's character is like, oh, wow, what a waste of ammo. And then, like, Ripley's crying because she just had to kill all these versions of herself. And he's like, oh, must be a chick thing. And we're like, wow.
Must be a chick thing.
Feminist icon, Ron Perlman.
I love, I hope, I don't know anything about Ron Perlman as a person, but I really enjoy seeing him in movies. And I love his Beauty and the Beast CBS show that he did with girl boss Linda Hamilton, Belle Lawyer.
Oh my God.
He lived in the sewers of New York. If you have Paramount Plus, you gotta watch it. It's so bizarre.
He breaks when Sigourney Weaver for real makes the 3-point line throwing the basketball over the, like, into the basket. He immediately breaks, and I just have to imagine that Sigourney Weaver must have said nothing, must have been so graceful about it, but must have just been so furious that he immediately ruined that shot.
I was trying to find out about that shot, because I guess that there was like a popular myth for a while that she got it on the first try.
The first take. She didn't get it in rehearsal. She trained really intensively with the professional basketball player,
right, for weeks.
Like at least a very intense 2 weeks. And apparently her trainer, she was supposed to not try to make it, and her trainer came up to her and was like, "Try to make it. You can do it."
Whoa. Oh. She did it.
I heard she was trained by the Monstars, and that's why she was so good.
I like that. That's a good headcanon.
Yeah.
Or Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny came over. He's like, "You've got this."
Well, she's spinning the ball on her pointy manicure that she has because she's part alien, so obviously she has pointy black nails like the aliens, which seems harder. I've never spun a basketball on my finger, and I never will, but it seems harder to do with acrylic nails.
Yeah.
She really makes it look convincing. Like when she's the choices made in that scene are all so funny and good. Like that scene in no way requires that she's playing basketball very well the whole scene.
I think
scene,
it was her idea. But
it's so good. Was it?
It seemed like from the interviews that it was her idea because she imagined it as the character kind of getting out of prison and just trying to have a good time, which is also while she keeps playing after beating people up.
Oh, okay. I think it's so funny.
It's the type of thing that where in a movie that I think had been more competently written, her basketball skills would, I'm so sorry, everyone.
Played later.
would pay off in some way, but then they don't. Yeah. And so this skill of hers is just established for no reason.
Yeah.
And then we just move on from basketball after that.
Yeah, Christie's skills come back into play, but from that scene.
Mm. True.
Yeah.
I did kind of wish on the second watch, I'm like, it would have been cool if basketball came back. I don't know how it would have, but it would have been cool.
Just at least be good at throwing something would make sense.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like pay off on that perfect shot. That's a good call.
Kind of throws blood later. It's more of a flick.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think it counts.
I mean,
but also it's like the way this movie works, I'm like, you know what? If there's a dropped thread, fine. I'll never regret having watched the basketball scene.
There's so many threads, though. You can't complain about that many threads.
True.
It's true.
Okay, so then the characters have to swim through, like, the flooded kitchen area. Aliens are chasing them through the water. Mm-hmm. They make it to the other side, but there's this huge nest where the queen has laid a bunch of eggs.
Also, in that underwater scene, the other, I like to call her other woman.
Other lady, yep.
Yeah, Hillard.
Dies. And we'll miss her so much. Just kidding. We don't know a single thing about her, and I kept forgetting she had died.
Her feet get such a closer close-up than her face, even right before she dies in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder.
I'm like, give her a closer close-up. She's about to die.
The movie really, like, the movie doesn't even seem to care that they're killing off this character to the point where I'm like, well, why did you add her if she says no words? And she's in the way background of every shot. And then they're just like, oh, and also she died.
She died.
Yeah. Well, there was that shot that went all the way down her body to her feet. So.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why they had her there.
That adds to that.
She's also the character that I guess like she and the Captain Elgin are an item. Mm-hmm. And he says something like,
right.
Oh, there's nothing hotter than seeing a woman strapped to a chair.
Well, that does happen.
I'm like, is that why she's there? Like, there's so many different creepy reasons that I hate that this character could have been completely neglected by the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor whatever that lady's name is.
Hillard.
R.I.P. that lady. Hillard?
Hillard.
Yes.
Justice for Hillard.
And truly. So they are birthed onto the other side in the middle of this nest. they're fighting their way out of this kind of trap. Some people die along the way, like Winona Ryder.
Including Christy.
And Christy.
And I don't know why. Like, I've seen this movie very many times, and I don't understand why Christy sacrifices himself. Like, acid to the face, big deal, but I don't get the self-sacrifice. Besides, he's really good, and we need him to go away so that later other deaths are more surprising. Like, we need to lose our sharpshooter, but I don't understand why he sacrifices himself at all.
I was also, I also had questions about that as well, because I also am just like, they're... It seems like the second the plot starts to ramp up, with the exception of like Sigourney and Winona, they're like, let's just kill off every woman and person of color we can. So we're left with the worst white guys that aren't well-written characters in the movie and then our leads. Like, it just is like, but why? Mm-hmm. But why?
Yeah.
I mean,
good question.
Dr. Wren's death is kind of fun.
Yeah.
That is fine. Yes.
We do get left over with the worst white guys. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So Christy dies. Call, a.k.a. Winona Ryder, dies. The military science dude, Wren, betrays them. He's the one who kills Call. Just kidding. She's not dead, because big reveal, she's a robot. And then they use her to, like, hack into the ship and basically set a course.
Great hacker dialogue here where she's just, like, she uses every buzzword available. She's like, yeah, I had to hack into the ship's mainframe to the motherboard, and now where it's all computers. You're like, totally, yes, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, it's revealed also that she's an automaton. Uh-huh. And, like, there's a lot of, like, you know, reproduction anxiety as it also relates to, like, cloning and then making robots throughout these movies. Mm-hmm. But there's Ripley's prejudice against robots throughout. And then in this world, there's at least not 20th century racism like in Aliens, but there's lots and lots of prejudice against this new generation of robots that were created by robots.
Right.
And so, like... Mm-hmm. It is cool. Like, everyone's, like, really grossed out and treats Winona Ryder like, oh, I can't believe I almost fucked you, you gross robot who has their own control over their actions.
Another just, like, Ron Perlman.
As if you never fucked a robot. You're like, okay.
I was like, what is, huh?
Yeah, there's another part where Elgin is talking to Dan Hedaya's character, and he's just like, yeah, do you see the new crew member we've got? Isn't she so fuckable? And he's talking about Winona Ryder's character. And and then everyone, as soon as they find out she's a robot, they're like, ew, gross, weird.
That's something that I think is like, and I will defer to both of you for referencing if this is a trend in the entire franchise, but that, like, the misogyny of the men in this movie is so over the top that I feel like I'm just like, what is the, like, it's maybe that's a genre thing, but it's just so much. And it seems like they have to they make an effort to remind you every 10 minutes, like, someone says something absolutely, like, horrific. It's never subtle. It's always really aggressive, and it doesn't ever really stop. I don't know.
And it's never sci-fi bigotry. It's never like, this is what sexism would be in the future. And even their ship has,
yeah, it's
like,
just like regular sexism.
Their ship is called the Betty and has a pinup girl on it, and it's just like, why is it still this? Like, I like there being only racism against robots, like, that's a fun idea, but, like, I feel like, come up with a new kind of prejudice, and then you're critiquing prejudice instead of just saying that in the year 2379. Well, I mean, in 2179, apparently we're making jokes about illegal aliens, but, like, 2379.
That's true. That's,
we still got pinup girls on ships.
I mean, fortunately, in 2379, our species will be extinct, so it's kind of a
true,
it's a non-issue.
Yeah,
but it is like this bizarre, like, why is there just 1997 misogyny here?
Mm-hmm. I guess because they're like,
you're in space, you can do whatever you want, but they're like, well, women suck.
Yeah, let's make fun of the person in the wheelchair, and also, like, how fuckable is my new employee?
Yeah.
Yipes. Yep. There's a lot of it. Thanks, Joss Whedon, for your amazing dialogue.
Also, no room for a wet whiskey, but like, there's obviously a lot of water on the ship that can leak out everywhere. Like, that seems heavy.
True.
Yeah. Very wet spaceships throughout.
I did like the whiskey cube special effect.
Yeah.
Very satisfying. Also, apparently still lemons and cherries, which is very optimistic about the 2300s. Like... Our military generals eating a lemon.
I didn't even think of that.
Right.
Like, where are the bees?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so they hack into the ship. Basically, Call sets like a collision course to crash the big ship that the aliens have infested so that they can get to the Betty and escape in this smaller freighter. Then as they're like rushing toward the Betty, Ripley falls through the floor and into a pile of aliens. Then she cuddles with the queen.
But it's
sexy cuddling, even though it's her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the queen, who thinks...
And a part of her.
And weirdly, a clony part of her. Yeah.
Yeah. They share genes, not just because she's the mom.
Right. Yes.
I have so I just have all question marks in that area of my notes. I'm like, well, okay.
We have no answers.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
Okay, so and then the queen, who thanks to Ripley now has a human reproductive system,
which is described as a gift. The guy who's been trying to train the aliens, just like her gift to her was a human reproductive system, mm-hmm. which the movie does subvert because the alien is so obviously in agony, which I like in this movie that is so obsessed with this one woman's maternity. This movie at least is, mm-hmm. this is disgusting. Like, human reproduction is disgusting as opposed to the other movies that are like, ooh, eggs, bad. Human make baby good. You be mother. And this one is just like, alien is just writhing around with its little arms twitching about in agony.
Yeah, you're just like, why is everything so horny and painful seeming in this one?
Yeah, equal parts horny and pain. Okay, so the queen now has a human reproductive system and then gives birth to this half alien, half like, it has a human skull face, uh-huh. and then it also meows like a cat.
Uh-huh.
And so that's Ripley's grandchild.
And the trainer guy, after watching Ripley, I mean, if anything, play the role of father in this relationship,
mm-hmm.
then he says, look, he thinks you're the mother, which I think is really funny and more of a critique of men viewing the thing rather than like actually making Ripley be the mother. Mm-hmm. Like, well, it thinks you're the mother. And it's like, well, no, it destroyed its mother. It thinks Ripley is its god. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not. It's really Ripley. Anyway, I mean, maybe we're getting too into it for the plot.
No, I love that. Podcast. That didn't click for me.
When I was like, what? What are you talking about? She's obviously not the mother. You'd watch the whole birth and sex scene. You're in a cocoon.
He's really chilling in this cocoon. He is.
Fun side note, this actor's IMDb photo looks exactly like a picture of Buster Keaton. It's just like in black and white, costume and all. I was like, what?
Weird. That actor is Brad Dourif, who played Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
As well as he's a major character in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So,
oh, okay.
He's got range, we'll uh-huh. say. Anyway, okay, so there's all the weird, like, horny, incestual cuddling.
Wait, hold on, sorry. You forgot his most important credit. Brad Dourif is the voice of Chucky.
What?
Oh my god.
Dourif has appeared in a number of horror films, most notably as the voice of Chucky in the whole Child's Play franchise. He's canon Chucky.
Wow.
I also think he, as him, like, as an actor, like, where you, not just him voice acting Chucky, but I think he's also in the Chucky movies as a different character as well. But I might be completely misremembering.
No, I think you're right. Charles Lee Ray, who I think is like the serial killer who's trapped inside of, or Charles Lee, yeah, he's like one of the bad guys in Chucky, and also the real bad guy, which is
Chucky.
I watched Chucky for the first time last year, and I was like, damn, this shit's pretty good. I liked it.
It kind of holds up. Yeah.
I was like, Chucky. Yeah, and then I watched Aubrey Plaza Chucky, and it wasn't that bad. Hmm. It wasn't good as original Chucky, but... you know, maybe we'll, I don't know if we have anything to say about Chucky on this particular show, but it was fun.
Sure, sure.
So anyways, Chucky's in the movie.
Chucky's in the movie. He dies. There's been all this horny, incestual cuddling, and then Ripley runs away and heads toward the Betty ship, but the weird alien follows her and gets onto the ship as well, and Ripley and
such
Carl,
a good reveal though.
Oh, it's my goodness.
Carl trying to close the door, and then the alien, baby alien helps. She was like, oh, baby alien,
that,
are you good or bad?
That scene, I when Caitlin and I watched this together the first time,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, maybe I just haven't been paying close enough attention, because I feel like this whole dramatic cutting back and forth feels very bizarre and unearned. But then I watched it a second time. I'm like, no, it still feels that way, where it's like something about the editing in the scene where it keeps cutting back to Sigourney Weaver for a little bit too long, where she's like, and then you come back to like this terrifying, like suck through a hole, bad CGI. I loved it. I love that scene.
Right.
It's so confusing.
Because what's about to happen is that Ripley and Carl have to deal with the alien who's gotten on board the Betty. And Ripley flings her acid blood onto a window and it creates this hole. And then the weird cat human alien get sucked out of the hole into space in what is one of the most disgusting, like, body horror things I've ever seen.
It takes its time.
And the movie really milks it for a long time. But not before Ripley kind of makes out with the alien, aka her grandchild.
Cuddles.
It's like horny nuzzling.
Yeah, it's very charged.
Yes. And then the movie ends with Ripley and Carl arriving on Earth, and they're like, wow, it's nice. The end. So,
yay!
Let's take another break, and then we'll come back to discuss.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back.
So, Gracie, I kind of wanted to start with you here and sort of let you lead us through, what are we missing about this movie? What are, and like, what about the popular kind of opinions surrounding this movie do you feel very differently about?
Okay, let me make my plea for Alien Resurrection.
Okay.
Because I think that it's really kind of, I really don't like that this movie becomes so obsessed with making Ripley into a mom. Mm. Obviously, it wasn't written as female. It took a long time for the writers to conceive of any of the characters not being men, and even longer for them to think, like, ooh, well, what if it was even the lead? And then the sequel is like, backstory was actually a mom, but we're going to take that away. Also, like, be a mom this whole movie, which was cool at the time because she's doing a good job at her job and being a mom, which I guess, like, historical context is powerful. And then the third one, she's pregnant the whole time, but with an alien, and, like, it's, like, and then it's obsessed with the fact that she is female-bodied because she's on a planet of rapists that only rape female-bodied people, apparently, and have a religion that women are bad and temptresses and should be kept far away. And, like, to me, that ruins the metaphor of it. What I like about this monster is it's a rape metaphor where everybody has to have birth anxiety. And I think a lot of movies that include rape metaphors are very, very gendered, and I like that it isn't doing that. But these movies are kind of obsessed with Ripley being a mom or not being a mom, and please be a mom. And then I think Alien Resurrection has the opinion that reproduction is disgusting. And you think alien reproduction is disgusting? Like, human reproduction, also disgusting and terrible for the mother. And aliens are gross and other and to be killed, but they are because of us. It's a xenomorph. Like, they're the way that they are, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the xenomorph's bad qualities come from us, and we see that in this movie with the alien sacrificing the other one. They kind of seem naturally hive-minded, or even like they might have whale-type intelligence and consciousness of the group, like ants or whales, but because they are partially us, they have this disgusting individualism. And then and this movie kind of takes it even farther, where then the reproduction becomes human, and then the baby becomes grotesquely more human-like, and then, like, this alien baby who I love, and I'll give all the nipples to, like, I love alien baby, and the way that they light it.
So wait, the baby to get sucked through a hole?
Yes, I love alien baby. I feel so bad for alien baby.
They really make you watch her die.
Yeah, they really make you watch that baby die. But, like, even when it's, like, even when it's attacking, you don't know whether or not it's attacking. And I feel like that's the human not, like, you know, the xenomorphs that we're used to age very, very quickly. But this is more human, and it seems more emotionally volatile, and it, like, doesn't have, like, a prime directive. And at one moment will be very, very cute and cuddly, but then also screaming and like as if it wants to attack you. And sort of how is that different than a human baby? I think what's cool and what's ever feminist about these movies is, like, the world is like, Ripley, you should have a baby. Like, why didn't you have a baby 284 years ago or whatever? And Ripley always chooses to save humanity instead of, like, an individual family. And I, like, in that way is much more parental and heroic than, like, just, like, let's have this character be a mother who wants to get home to see her daughter's 11th birthday. So what I love about this movie is I feel like you really get into who is disgusting. Is it the xenomorph, or is it the humanity that they have adopted genetically? And this movie is just really, like reproduction in general is disgusting. It's gross when robots do it themselves. It's gross when we clone things. It's gross when aliens have babies. And it's also gross when humans have babies. It is terrible and traumatic and disgusting. And why is there still humanity in the year 23? Whatever.
This is, I mean,
I totally, like, I thank you for, like, laying that out for us, because it feels like this movie has not gotten this amount of like love and attention to detail. I'm so interested in that, because that was, like, I still have a lot of confusion, honestly, and, like, some criticism around this movie. But I did, like, one thing that really hit for me in Ripley 8's character in this movie was, and I feel like it's, I guess that they explore it kind of thoroughly. It's all over the place. But the idea that she is considered worthless after the baby has been taken out of her. And, like, I think Dan Hidea literally refers to her as, like, she's a sack of meat to us at this point. We don't care. And I feel like that does say something about how we in today years still kind of characterize mothers or how mm-hmm. people with wombs are characterized after they've, you know, quote unquote, served their purpose and perpetuated the human race mm-hmm. and all of that. And how Ripley 8 is determined to continue to just like find purpose and meaning in whatever that means for her after it's clear that the structure in which she's been brought into has seen her as like outliving her use. I feel like you can apply that to motherhood. You can apply that to just aging in general. And like, she feels confident that she still has purpose and wants to keep learning more about herself after people have told her that she no longer is useful. So from that perspective, I really like, that's the part of Ripley 8's journey that I felt like was really effective. And then there's a bunch of other stuff also.
Right. I think there could be a parallel drawn between some of the stuff that's happening in this movie and the things that are happening in Texas right now, as far as the abortion ban and like an obsession of being in control of the bodies of like childbearing people, where this movie, I guess I was maybe oversimplifying things in my brain in terms of like, this franchise does get more and more obsessed with like reproduction, especially as it mm-hmm. pertains to wombs and birthing and motherhood, where like the first movie you just establish that basically anyone can get impregnated by these face huggers, and then mm-hmm. you give birth out of your chest, and that's what we see happening to John Hurt's character. Aliens heightens this, where we see that happening, I think, to a few different characters, and then we see like the queen mother laying eggs, and then like mm-hmm. Ripley becomes a de facto mother to Newt, and then it's like you said, this kind of like canon gets retroactively established that she was also previously a mother. I would say Alien 3, there isn't quite so much like birthing type imagery and metaphor, but
except that she's saved and she's precious because she's pregnant with an alien.
Yes, that's true. Mm. That's true. And then this movie, like we've hinted at, there's so much imagery. Like every few minutes, it seems like there's some birth metaphor happening, or there's mm-hmm. some reference to wombs and reproduction. And
I mean, and sometimes it's not, even if it's not stated, it's visually stated, right? Where it's like when they get out of the water, they have to like kind of born themselves again because there's that weird little birth shell that they gotta punch through. I'm like, oh, and mm-hmm. then they all got born again,
and you take
like,
your first breath again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People keep being born.
I mean, even the way the baby alien dies, it's getting sucked through a hole. That could maybe even be considered like a birth metaphor. Mm-hmm. But then I was, as you were kind of laying all of that out, Gracie, I was like, oh, well, this movie is largely about this group of men who are doing all of these like experiments and cloning and obsessed with, they're the ones who are obsessed with this reproduction and these creatures with wombs and birthing and all that stuff, much this way that like conservative lawmakers are obsessed with controlling, again, the bodies of childbearing people. So mm-hmm. I wonder, I don't know how much intentional commentary there is on that in this movie, but I think there's like an interesting parallel that you can draw in terms of like, yeah, look how obsessed these people who don't really understand quote unquote female reproduction and wombs mm-hmm. and bodily autonomy and having mm-hmm. choices over your own body. Like they clone Ripley without her consent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she was already impregnated with the alien or if they impregnate her. Either way, like that whole thing happens without her consent. Mm-hmm. And then all this other stuff, just like, they're just making choices for these people and or creatures.
Yeah.
Like it's, wait, you're blowing our minds. Alien resurrection, good, actually.
Well, I think, you know, we've seen the military in this world 200 years before that and this, and there are a lot of, I mean, not a lot of them get named aloud, and a lot of them die pretty early, but there are men and women in the military, and I think it is intentional in the script that all of these military people who are outside of, like, legal jurisdiction, too, they're, like, in an area of space where, like, things aren't controlled.
Right.
But they're all male, and then also the ship is father instead of mother.
Instead of mother, like in the other movies, yeah.
And, like, you know, like, in your previous discussion about Alien, like, there's even, like, should that count as a character? I think it's really problematic to make subservient robots and computers female. Like, the first year that Siri came out, the number one question that she was asked was, what's your bra size? And
we had a conversation like that in the Her episode a couple years ago now, where it's, like, that is such, like, there is a psychological human conditioning by society, not by nature, that people are more comfortable telling a female voice what to do.
Yeah, and then yelling at it when it's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's not what I asked for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it is intentional that it's father, and I think it is intentional that it's these ridiculous over the top cartoonish men think that they can possess life and control and profit off of life, and they can't control the aliens and they can't control Ripley, and it's the death of them all. So I do think it is intentionally commenting on that. There is one female character who is on their side, who is just billed as anesthesiologist. And that does not follow the Loftus rule of women with least hair has most power.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
Which is unfortunate.
She is the baldest woman, but she is not in charge.
She's the opposite of in charge.
And unnamed, which
yeah.
I feel like a lot of these characters don't have allowed names. Give her a name.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Like, it's, I mean, I guess Hiller technically has a name, but also they forgot to write her a character.
Yeah.
And kind of going off of that discussion, the other thing that really worked for me in this movie was the connection that Call and Ripley 8 end up forming by listening to each other, because it's whatever Call has, we learn, has been, you know, told and programmed by the patriarchal structure that she was made by to destroy Ripley. But in connecting with each other in a way that makes sense in story, they're not just like, oh, we're the women characters, so we have to band together and be friends in a vague way. But it's like you have like two real scenes with them figuring each other out and forming a bond and a friendship. And at first, honestly, going into this episode, I was like, wow, we have like 5 million asshole human men, and our two, like the two women who are the leads of this movie, they have, I think, humanity from the story aspect, but it's like alien clone born Sigourney yesterday and robot Winona. But the more we talk about it, the less I'm fixating on that. I don't know, because their scenes together are very, I think, like, you understand why they band together, and you understand why Ripley 8 is choosing Call over Baby.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of the lock-in of this movie is finding out that those two characters share a common goal, even though the scene is Call going to kill her. And they do have this, like, you know, why are they keeping you alive? Like, I don't know, the newest thing. So I think that they are both women who are supposed to feel ashamed of their bodies by the patriarchal system in which they exist. Ripley refuses to and embraces what is different about her clone body, and the same happens with Call.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool that, like, they're like, it's an auton and a clone, and yet they're like, no, I'm gonna be powerful and, like, try to find happiness on my own. And Call is so ashamed of her body and learns not to be because it saves the day, and then says, father is gone, asshole, and then it's great.
Right. And like, their common journey of being told what they're good for and what they're supposed to be doing, and realizing that there are other ways to be and to, like, whatever. Like, I was like, oh my God, I need to text my therapist. Shame deprogramming, let's say. And like deprogramming your own shame, deprogramming your, you know, just the idea that your quote unquote creator or your overlord or whoever it is, for them, it's like their literal creator. What they ascribe as the meaning of your life isn't what, like, they don't get to decide that.
Yeah.
So in that way, wow, movie good. Wow.
And I like that they have conflict again, because it seems like you get them together in a scene and they realize they have the same enemy, and like, here it is, it's going to be Sigourney and Winona being buddies against the aliens. And then the next time we see them again, they're fighting and they have completely different points of views of how they should be doing things and who should be in charge. And I like that there's that conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also, I love when it seems like Sigourney is going to flamethrow Dr. Wren. Yeah. And then she ends up like just like giving the gun away and saying, "Don't do what?" And then Winona just gives a perfect punch to the face to Dr. Wren, which is like such a great moment.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Which you guys talked about the like men punching women and women punching men thing that happens in action sci-fi genre in I think your Aliens episode.
Right, yes.
And there is like, you know, and there's some superhuman element to this, but Sigourney does get barbelled in the nose pretty early.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And she fights right back. And I mean, yeah, there seems to be very little anxiety that this movie has about who's fighting who. It's like whoever in the scene needs to be fighting.
It doesn't need to be,
even if it's mid-basketball game.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I didn't feel, I mean, even though there is violence inflicted upon women, it didn't feel specifically gendered or as though like women were being targeted because they were women. It just felt like these are characters in an action movie, equal opportunity inflicting violence and violence being inflicted upon you regardless of gender, which I suppose is parody.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, And I didn't, I was kind of waiting. I was like, okay, 1997, let's see when a woman's going to be tossed to the side in the middle of an action scene to be like, we got to keep you safe. Like, whatever. Mary Jane at the climax of Spider-Man 2, they're like, we have to trap her in a very sticky web because what if she tried to punch someone?
Someone, you mean Doc Ock?
Yes, I do. What if Mary Jane was like, I'm going with Doc Ock? That would have been smarter.
I'll allow
it. It's my headcanon.
This is a tangent and you can cut it out, but because listening to your Aliens episode earlier today, it was brought up to both of you, but I can't, like, a conversation happened to Caitlin Durante, who has a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University, about the fight sequence in John Wick 2 against Ruby Rose. And I guess it's important to discuss John Wick fights women, but more importantly to tell Caitlin Durante, who has a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University, is that that fight happens at the moment in Act 2 where John Wick should, like, reflect upon himself and then grow and change and realize that he needs his need instead of his want. But because it's a John Wick movie, that's never going to fucking happen. So instead of that, he has a fight sequence with Ruby Rose and an art installation of mirrors called The Reflection of the Self.
Oh, okay. No. Oh my God. I feel like that was Keanu's idea. That sounds like a Keanu. He's like, what if we called it Reflections of the Self?
This like unspoken screenwriting joke.
That is very funny.
I love that.
Thank you for bringing up my master's degree in screenwriting, because, you know, I would never.
I feel like it hasn't been coming up enough lately.
It hasn't been coming up because I would never bring it up. So
you wouldn't. You never would.
I appreciate you doing it, Gracie. Thank you.
Yeah. Unspoken screenwriting jokes. Very good.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Can we talk about the Vryce character, Dom Vryce? Like, we've had this discussion many times on the show at this point, but Dom Vryce is a wheelchair-bound character who is played by all accounts that I was able to find, not a disabled actor, which, again, is, like, such a a very 1997 casting decision that is just, like, it's so unnecessary. I feel like we're... It's always worth repeating that there are so many talented disabled actors that would have fucking nailed that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wanted to call that out, and also just discuss that character a little bit.
Yes, because the way that he is treated, especially by Ron Perlman's character, Johnner,
yes,
is astonishingly horrible, where I feel like this is a pretty common thing for, if there is an inclusion of a marginalized character in some way, and here specifically a character with a physical disability, where there is an inclusion and visibility, but it comes at the cost of that character being horribly abused.
Just bullied aggressively.
Yeah.
That seems to be the whole function of the Ron Perlman character in this movie in a way that doesn't really work for me. And I feel like that is like kind of a Joss Whedon and like 90s 2000 writer thing that is done is the idea of the Ron Perlman character is because of how he's written and presented that he's wrong, but I feel like you're still encouraged to laugh along with him. So what is the point of telegraphing to the audience, this guy's an asshole, but also the way he's delivering them like they're comedy lines, they're, mm-hmm. I think that they're supposed to be perceived as comedy lines. And so when he's teasing and abusing the only disabled character, or, you know, just firing off every sexist missive he could possibly think of, mm-hmm. then it's like, well, what? It feels like a having it both ways in a way that doesn't work.
Especially because he's one of the few characters that survives through the entire movie.
Yeah, why doesn't he die?
It'd be one thing if he was an asshole to everyone and then we understood that and his lines weren't played for comic relief and then he was punished by being killed. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't happen. In fact, at the end, when Ripley and Call have killed the final baby alien by sucking it out of a hole in the window, even though the two of them seem completely fine and don't get their guts sucked out of the window.
Well, I think they both are supposed to have a little bit of superhuman going on.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think because, you know, Cal is a robot, and because Ripley is part alien, they're able to hold on and be okay, and they're pretty close to that atmosphere, I think, at that point.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's the reason that it's like, if the military guy's left over, DeStefano, if he was still there and hadn't been killed, like, I think he would have not been so okay with that.
Yeah. Right. But I guess I'll suspend my disbelief for that. They're also, they buckle themselves into the wall, so I guess they're fine. Anyway, so when Ripley returns from that big climactic defeat of the alien, Ron Perlman's character throws off a little quip where he's just like, oh, or he's just like, hey, Ripley. And then she's like, you remembered my name or something. And then there's like kind of like a comedic
growth.
Like a nice moment between them, I guess, is what that's meant to be. And it's like, no, you don't get to redeem yourself after you've verbally assaulted like every person in the cast of the movie.
Even he's obviously a terrible bully and a terrible bigot, but even just the tiniest bits of his actions are just unforgivable. Like, he gets mad at Cal for wasting his homemade liquor, and then he throws Christie's. Like, he gets upset at Ripley for wasting ammo, and then shoots a spider.
He shoots a spider!
Like, why?
That is the funniest part of the movie.
You're just the worst guy.
That is comedy gold, and I'm obsessed with it.
Okay, that's a great moment, but he's a hypocrite.
Yeah, he's awful.
I will say, for getting back to Dom's character a little bit, I would also be very curious to hear what our disabled listeners who have seen this movie made of how he was characterized throughout the movie. One thing that I was encouraged isn't the word, not horrified by, I guess, is that Dom remains extremely active throughout all of the action scenes, where I feel like there is such a tendency to sideline, and Kirsten Dunst and the spider web characters who are disabled in action sequences specifically, but in a lot of genres, he is like, those action sequences, particularly like once they're on the ladder and all this stuff, like those scenes don't work if his character is removed from the scene. And so I did like that Dom is in the way that there's parity across genders in action. It seems like there was a fair amount of parity with ability as well in the action scenes, which was cool.
Yeah, I felt that too. And I think it's notable that he also survives until the end and that he doesn't, because I feel like a lot of movies would have killed off a disabled character specifically because of their, like, they wouldn't have survived because of their disability. And I think that it's actually pretty remarkable that the filmmakers let that character survive until the end.
It's true.
Yeah.
You cannot say the same for how non-white characters in this movie are treated.
That is true.
I mean, I think that Christy, who, by the way, is played, it took me so long into the movie. I'm like, I know this guy. And I kept thinking of the actor Gary Dordan is his name. And I was like, looking at him, I was like thinking of my aunt's house. I'm like, what is the connection between this man and my aunt's house? He was on CSI for like 10 years. And my aunt used to love that show. So I was like, oh, it's CSI guys. So whatever. That's a useless fact that you can know. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that he's Christy is the only black character who has a lot of influence on what goes on in the plot. There are other people of color.
It's just Christy and the soldier who gets frozen who are black. And then there's the two Latinx military men, including the general and then the one who makes it a long time.
Yes.
Right. But it's like even the guy who lives a long time, I don't know what his name was or like what it, anything about him. In the same way that like with the other lady, we don't know anything about her. She makes it about halfway. But like, who was that? No idea.
Yeah.
I didn't know until listening to y'all's episodes that this franchise never has a woman of color character. Or guest character, but Vasquez is played by a white woman? What?
Yeah, Vasquez is played by a white woman in brown face in the movie Aliens.
It is true. Like, I feel like there are not many popular movies with stuff that ages quite as poorly as brown face character in one of the best regarded sci-fi movies of all time. Yeah. It's so infuriating. Yeah. And also, I mean, this franchise for as much as I am like genuinely being swung to the side of like, this movie's pretty good because Gracie is a worker of miracles.
All I'm saying is better than 39%. Better than 39%.
I'll give it a 41. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But this, I mean, throughout, it's for a franchise that is really fixated on reproduction anxiety, which I do think is a topic that isn't off the table for, you know, men to explore. I think that that's like, it's a worthy, it's a topic that affects anyone who's ever been born. So sure, people are, you know, entitled to explore that topic. But the fact that it's like, if you go through the production, like the top level production of every single one of these movies, it's just guys. It's just white guys. Like it's
of mans.
Yeah. And it's like, let's get some other voices in the room here. Mm-hmm. Maybe with people who have been on both sides of this thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to say a kind of gender normative thing, but I think that if there was anybody in charge who was female bodied in this production, they would have shot the close up of her manicure on a day where it wasn't so grown out. Like it is her cocoon birth. I'm just like, that's a 2 week old manicure. Like this is the one time you were going to shoot a close up of it.
I mean, maybe they were like, well, it'll be too unrealistic if, where did she get this manicure? On a ship? We have to let it grow out so it looks...
I believe that they just don't... They weren't looking and they
didn't know. They're supposed to be her nails. And it like it doesn't look like nails because it looks like a grown-out acrylic manicure. And it really bugs me.
But that's like a very valid point. It's like, I feel like that is like almost giving the same, like the ponytail moment in Birds of Prey where it's like, if you know, you know. And if you don't, people are going to make fun of you for not attempting to know. I forget what I was about to say. Something about birth. I feel like we've talked a lot about birth.
My notes for this movie were pretty sparse. It was mostly Ron Perlman shoots a spider, the end.
I have a lot of I honestly like being able to understand this movie through your perspective, Gracie, I feel like has genuinely been very, very helpful to me to understand, because it is like there is a lot of interesting stuff going on here. And then I just feel like it doesn't quite go as far as I would like it to in other areas. And also just like, yeah, this movie's really erotic, you know? In a way that, like, I don't hate it. It's just like, it's, I like, I, that's not even a criticism I have as much as an unavoidable observation.
Well, it's erotic between Ripley and her alien offspring. So I do have a problem with it in the sense that it's incestuous.
I see that it's so cuckoo that it didn't super bother me in like a, I guess it is like the gendered way that people interact with xenomorphs is like, I feel like that is more what stuck with me of watching back old scenes from Alien and Aliens and men being so freaked out by being inhabited by a parasite, and then childbearing people like inherently being like, no, I must protect the parasite, as if this is just like a universal response. Like, I don't.
Yeah. See, what I love about it as a monster.
She's nuzzling her babies a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I really like that it equalizes birth anxiety. And from a writer who thinks that men might have womb anxiety, this movie does not suggest that anybody has womb anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think that really, I don't know, I really like that about this monster, and I hate like making the fear of it gendered at all. But I do think that the relationship between Ripley and the alien baby is, to me, it's supposed to be more God destroying their own creation than mother rejecting child. And
I like that. Yeah.
The prequels did not exist even as an idea, I don't think, at this moment. But then it, like, that really does resonate. And I think that gives this movie a good place in the franchise, is that these movies become less about the anxiety of acts like birthing an alien and more about what have we created as humanity and do we need to destroy it? And then there's, of course, this other alien species that created us and intends to destroy it. And that's where the xenomorph goo comes from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it feels more to me like this movie is maybe just an optimistic reading of it, but it feels like this franchise is like, Ripley, you need to be a mom. Go be a mom. You're a mom. You're a woman. You have a womb. You're going to get raped and you're going to be a mom. And then this movie is like, no, Ripley's a fucking god and she's going to reject her own creation and save humanity.
To save. Fuck. Gosh, wow.
But I feel like how much of it was originally sexual and how much of that is just Ridley Scott noticing the H.R. Giger designs, but then even like the way that they're creating those designs, the actual pieces on set, like, whose idea was it that the facehugger is literally an oyster?
It's a vagina. Literally an oyster. It's the vagina-iest vagina monster I've seen in a while.
And that's saying something, because they get pretty vagina.
But it's also a penis monster. I have written on my arm from you earlier, Jamie, don't wax my flaps.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know the two flap thing. But I love that it's a penis horror and it's a vulva horror. And it's the horror of birth for everybody.
Yeah.
And then Alien 3 is just like, what if instead of the metaphor, she was just always about to get raped all the time?
Oh, you're God. Like, thanks, David. Interesting idea.
I want to be clear that, like, we here on the Bechdel cast, and we've talked about this before, but motherhood is something we obviously fully support, assuming a person who becomes a mother wants to be a mother. I don't want to sound like we are condemning motherhood or childbirth in any way.
Right.
What we are critical of is the patriarchal expectation for anyone with a womb to give birth and to become a mother and go through that process, and the expectation that that's basically the sole purpose of a person with a womb, regardless of whether or not that person wants to be a mother and be a parent, because historically that's been what society values and expects of people with wombs. And so, again, it's that oppressive expectation that we take issue with.
Yeah.
It's completely anti-choice and it's turfy and it's get your creepy laws away from people.
Right, right, right.
Which in this world still hasn't been resolved by the 2300s, which is like just wacky enough to believe.
And also still smoking, I guess.
Just cause, also, you know. Well, you know, big tobacco. It's wild. is there any other stuff we... That was all I had for notes. What is there... Are there anything we haven't touched on yet?
I've covered everything I had.
Yeah.
I think we nailed it. I think we blew Alien Resurrection wide open.
I also just wanted to give the Bechdel cast a tip of the hat for how many movies we've covered that came out in the year 1997, because the production conflicts for this movie, when Genet was trying to get space to film this movie, because I guess the other Alien movies were shot in England. This was shot in Hollywood because Sigourney was a co-producer and she was just like, why the international commute? Mm-hmm. Which I think is like really very good use of power. But they were shooting at like a Hollywood lot, mm-hmm. and they had difficulty securing studio space because of Titanic and because of Starship Troopers and because of The Lost World Jurassic Park. So there were just so many huge movies filming in Hollywood studios in 1996.
Wow.
Wild.
The best of them, of course, being Titanic, the best movie ever made. It's a fact.
Does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
It actually does quite a lot.
Yeah.
It does between Ripley and Call primarily, but they talk about aliens. They talk about how Call is a robot. They talk about how Ripley is part alien. They talk about Earth. They talk about a lot of stuff.
Religion.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of humanity and if humans possess it.
And Ripley says, I knew you couldn't be a human. You're too humane.
Yeah, no human being could be that humane, which is only the second most Joss Whedon-y line in this. I think second to, I thought you were dead. I get that a lot. Still a very good line.
That's pretty funny. I did have to laugh when Ripley says something like, who do I have to fuck around here to get off this boat? And then Ron Perlman's like, well, I can get you off. Maybe not the boat. And I was like,
not the ship.
I mean, he's a despicable character, and that's a gross line coming from him, but it's a pretty funny line otherwise. Mm-hmm. Anyway, does it pass the Bechdel test when Ripley has to murder the terrifying body horror clone of herself with a flamethrower? I think it could.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's a tense interaction, but, you know, let women have tension.
Yeah, she says, kill me. And then Ripley's kill like, me. Okay.
And the response is the action. It's not a dialogue response, but it's definitely a conversation.
It's a conversation. Yeah,
it's true.
So it passes handily. As far as our nipple scale goes, a scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on how the movie fares, looking at it through an intersectional feminist lens.
Coming in hot.
I'll split it. I'll give it a right down the middle, 2.5. I do think there is some interesting commentary being made on kind of the just obsession of male authority figures and like the fact that it's military and medical, you know, because there's a lot to criticize about the way medical professionals, some of them, harbor a lot of biases and withhold medical care from a lot of marginalized groups of people. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like interesting that it's these like military medical personnel and like all, you know, these industrial complexes that are obsessed with basically using female bodies as vessels to perpetuate their own very destructive agenda. And yeah, I think there's, again, these interesting parallels to be drawn about what's happening currently in the world in terms of groups of men being obsessed with controlling people with uteruses and denying people access to bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
So I think that's all an interesting thing that the movie explores. I think that as far as how effectively it does that, that might be a little up for debate. But I think it's, I appreciate that the movie attempts something like that. Mm. I don't like how weirdly horny Ripley gets for her children, her alien children. I do appreciate that the main relationship that emerges in the movie that we are rooting for is between two femme-presenting beings. Again, they're not human women, but they are, right, for all intents and purposes, women, I suppose. And that's the kind of most compelling relationship between characters in the entire movie. Yeah, so there's some pros and cons of this very bizarre movie that's obsessed with birth imagery. I will give it 2.5 nipples. Does that seem too high?
No. Okay. I think I'll probably meet you there.
Okay. All right. And I will give them to the spider that gets shot to death by Ron Perlman.
I'll meet you at 2.5. I think that there are a lot of really admirable swings in this movie, and honestly, this conversation has been so enlightening and helpful in clarifying some of those swings. and I also, I mean, I like your interpretation, Gracie, that of Ripley as God versus Ripley as alien grandma. And that resolves, I think, like a lot of the like cognitive dissonance I was experiencing. And I think that that's a more, I wish that if that was the like canonical intention, I wish that that was, that almost they hit that a little harder, because I feel like that's a really like cool journey to track in a way that is like clear and obvious. I'll piggyback on what you said, Caitlin. I like that the central relationship is Ripley and Call. I think that their connection makes a lot of sense. I like their mutual rejection of what they've been told about who they've been made to be versus making a choice as an individual that's also in the interest of the collective at the same time. Like, that's such a difficult line to toe, that it's like the thing that I think this movie maybe does the most effectively. And then there's a bunch of stuff that's like hit and miss that we've spent the last 2 hours discussing, so I won't rehash. But I think that 2.5 feels good and admirable, an admirable swing. Definitely a movie that like... I did, like, if not rewards on rewatching, there's definitely shit you missed if it's been a long time since you've seen this movie, and I think it's aged in a really interesting way. And watch it with friends. Don't watch it alone. Have a good night with friends. So I'll do 2.5. I will give 1 to That Lady That Dies. I'll give 1 to The Basketball. And I'll give the last 0.5 to Ripley. 8.
I, on the other hand, think that this is a 4 nibble movie. I'll remind you that you both gave 4 nipples to Aliens, both of you.
That sounds like something I would have done a couple of years ago. Yeah.
I recognize that maybe a lot of what I love about this movie is perhaps headcanon and is not necessarily super active in the movie, but I do think that a lot, like, there's a lot of male gaze going on in this movie. The direction is very, very male gaze. And I agree. I mean, it's like she's being really sexy with the alien, but I feel like what that moment is supposed to be, and it is really sexy when Sigourney Weaver is keeping her eyes still and moving her head around just because she looks like Sigourney Weaver and she's moving in a fluid way. But it's supposed to be her choosing between her animal side and her human side and choosing humanity. I don't think that's the script. I think it's just on set. It became very sexy. I'm gonna throw a nipple at least subverting the Born Sexy Yesterday trope, because
Toss it over your shoulder,
right into the basketball hoop.
Because, you know, and they're really surprised that that's a side effect. And I'm going to give, a nipple to Call for all of the reasons. Just I don't know. It's Winona Ryder and Sigourney Weaver being badasses in a movie together. Like, that does a lot for me. Especially since part of the reason Sigourney Weaver got cast in the first place was from being very tall, and everyone who was doing casting was like, see, this I can see as Ripley. Like, that's Ripley walking in the room, and she, like, credits her, quote, hooker boots about it. So as a short person, I like that there's also Winona Ryder being a badass. 5'3". And I'm going to give a nipple to the baby alien because I love the baby alien so much, and the lighting of the baby alien. They apparently had to CGI off the umbilical cord when it was walking because it looked too much like a penis,
which is just like a
fun little...
I love that baby alien fact.
Yeah, there was like a CGI thing that had to happen. It was the guy who CGI'd it said it was the weirdest editing he'd had to do. To me, relates just a tiny bit, even though Joss didn't have anything to do with production, to Joss Whedon really wanting Vision to have a penis and having to be shown what that would look like to be told that that is incorrect. But that's a sidetrack. And I'm going to give a nipple to the Joss Whedon-y dialogue because, thinking about the human being aside, I love dialogue like that. And just my lead character, my Ripley being told, I thought you were dead. I get that a lot. I'm like, that's a nipple for me. Mm. That's a nipple for me, dog.
I think that's 4 nipples. Fair.
Love it.
Well, Gracie, thank you so much for coming back and for helping us.
Yes, thank you for bringing
appreciate this movie.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you watched it. You can skip 3. Cubed.
Yeah, right.
The more I learn about Alien Cubed, the more I'm just like, I don't think I'll ever see the need to see it.
No.
No.
Where can people follow you online, check out your stuff, plug away?
I'm online on Instagram at Gracie Gillam, GRACIEGILLAM. And right now you can watch me in Superhost on Shudder app. It is coming up on spooky season, so good time to get Shudder app. And it's a good movie to watch in your home and contemplate the validity of safety in the domestic sphere.
Ooh. Hell yeah.
Oh my.
Superhost on Shudder.
Hell yeah. Check it out. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Bechdelcast. You can subscribe to our Patreon, aka Matreon, for $5 a month at patreon.com/Bechdelcast. It gets you 2 bonus episodes every month, plus access to the entire back catalog of bonus episodes, which is over 100 now, I think.
Yeah, I think we did it. We've crossed into triple figures.
Wow, there's so much content left to explore if you're not already a matron.
And you can also grab our some merch over at teepublic.com/thebechdelcast if you are so inclined. If you have a baby alien to dress, I'm pretty sure we have clothes for baby aliens.
Triple XL.
Also, I mean, it is a very size inclusive site, so go there, have a good time. And everyone, I think we just got to Earth? I mean, I know it's kind of a shithole, but...
I'd rather stay with the things, man!
Oh,
fun fact, like, she's apparently they're gonna put the ship, they're gonna send the ship to somewhere that's unpopulated, and according to xenopedia.com, that place is Central Africa.
Okay.
So, that's interesting.
No.
Interesting. Okay. Well... this movie's a mess.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.